with that old in crowd. Living's a battle and you're losing the fight. I went to the doctor and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple. It's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse. Don't spill it now.
Hello again. This is Ken Logan, Dr. Ken Logan. And I'm a family practitioner here in Chico. And what I do is a show called The Doctor's Inn, the third Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 in the evening. And I like to cover subjects on medical and health issues that I think would be good for all of us to know about and be on the same page about. If you have something that you'd like me to bring up on the show, look into, and cover on the show, you could contact me on my email account or address, and that is klogan.md@yahoo.com. First of all, on this kind of show, I got to say to you this. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. Speaking of underwriters, let's talk about those things we call underwriters, those people. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters. And there's a silent pledge drive going on right now for KZFR. And by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council, since 2001, actually. Friends of the Arts creates economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and by publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or to have your event listed, visit friendsoftheart.net. And by Dahlmeier Insurance Agency, an independent agent and retail broker since 1948. Dahlmeier Insurance provides a range of coverage options from home and auto insurance to farm and ranch coverage. You can reach Dahlmeier Insurance in Chico at 342-6421, and in Orville at 533-3424 or at chicoinsurance.com. Okay, today's show, The Doctor's Inn, is going to consist of, let me give you a little outline here. I'm going to start with some advice relative to the heat. I don't know if you guys know that, but it's hot outside. You probably do know that. The next thing I'm going to drift into is going to talk about the Affordable Care Act and a Supreme Court ruling from this morning in Washington, D.C., and that morphs into a little blurb on Medicare for All. And then I'm going to go into something that's come up, especially during the pandemic, the year and a half of pandemic, and that is self-care, or taking care of yourself. And I'm gonna talk about that a while today. If I have time, I'm going to morph into a little information thing on needle exchange. That's going to be soon present here in Chico and what that is. And then also, if I have time, I'll talk about a FDA announcement recently about the banning of menthol flavoring in cigarettes that attract youth to cigarettes and small cigars. And then if I have time, I'll talk a little bit about COVID variants such as the Delta that's come up lately. There you go. I'll try to move along. Okay, I'm starting out with something that's important. This is important information about heat stress. And what I mean by that is that term is used to talk about the effect on the human body of prolonged exposure to excessive heat. And it's something we all need to know. not only for ourselves, but for others around us or for fellow community members. So heat stress problems can come up and things you want to watch for relative to that. And I'm going to talk about some of the specifics of that. And of course, it's important this time of year. Heat-related conditions or problems or injuries are essentially caused by excessive loss of water from our bodies due to what our bodies are doing to help cool ourselves. You know, we lose fluid in our skin when we're trying to cool ourselves, and also through our breathing out, fluids are lost from our air ways through our breathing. So we get low on fluids, obviously, in excessive heat. Not to be confused with, however, now I'm talking about persistent or fairly prolonged exposure to excessive heat. What I'm not talking about in this subject right now, I'm not talking about brief, simply walk into your car in the excessive heat, or, you know, doing something like that, or walking to the store in excessive heat, which are temporary heat exposures. But I'm rather talking about prolonged exposure to excessive heat, such as being outside working. And being outside in your job, either in the agricultural industry or other industries where you're outside, even those who are not necessarily in the sun, but are nonetheless out in the heat. Or for people who are existing outside. For instance, people without homes. Some, of course, of us call that homelessness, but people without homes are living outside. I saw people living outside as I walked in here today over in the Central Park. You know, this is the way of life of some people. So anyway, this information I'm going to lay out is for all of us to know, including any of us who might, for instance, be interacting with someone who is without a home near where you work or live. Because all of us, of course, should watch out for others around us relative to signs of heat stress consequences. And we need to know about that so we can not only help ourselves, but also, of course, be there for others. Okay, so when we talk about the damage to the body or the injury of heat to the body, generally we're talking about two categories of severity. And I'm going to name those two categories, and then I'm going to go back and talk about them more in more detail. The first step is generally called heat exhaustion, and then a much more severe situation that can proceed to is something called heat stroke, which is an major emergency. So anyway, I'm starting with heat exhaustion. And what does that mean? What's it look like? And what to do? Well, symptoms of heat exhaustion, that is, from prolonged exposure to excessive heat with lack of adequate amounts of fluids or water in your body, symptoms can be headache, nausea, lightheadedness, weakness, irritability, excessive thirst, excessive sweating. And if you were to touch that person's skin, that skin would be hot. And then decreased urination. So again, headache, nausea, dizziness or lightheadedness, weakness, irritability, excessive thirst, heavy sweating, and hot to touch on the skin, and decreased urinary output. Those are all the symptoms that can come with heat exhaustion. Okay, so what do you do about that? If it's in you, or if it's in one of your loved ones, or if it's someone you're trying to help out in the community or elsewhere. Well, the first obvious thing to do is you got to get more fluids inside you. That's the biggie, first of all. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a second. I'm just going to name these things off, and then I'm going to go back into detail. So you need more fluids in you. You need to get out of the heat. You need to remove excess clothing. You need to get some water on your head and neck area. and you need to be observed or watched. So now let me get into those details in more detail now. First of all, you need more fluids inside your body. So drink water, 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 or other liquid, not alcoholic liquid. That's not the hydration liquid of choice. So water, 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 or other any other fluid except alcohol. Now, I mentioned, as far as symptoms go for heat exhaustion, that nausea is potentially on the list of symptoms for that. So if you or the other or some other person that you're trying to help with heat exhaustion has nausea as part of their symptoms, then the drink of fluids can be a problem, right? So I want you to know, though, that it's still enormously important. So if the person, you or other person, is having nausea, then you want to go sip. In other words, you don't want to take a big old slug. Of water. You want to go little by little by little, but persistently so, repetitively so. Don't give up on it. So, if you're helping somebody with this, that's your one of you or you got to be helping this person sip continuously, little by little, get that fluid in them. And then the second thing, get out of the heat if possible, and it needs to be possible. So, get into the shade. If you're out in the sun, get into the shade, some shade, any shade, or best get inside, of course, a cool building. Where I'm sitting right now, it's pretty cool in the studio, I will tell you. Air conditioner's working, I like it. But anyway, get inside a cool building, if possible. The third thing, remove unnecessary clothing. That is excess clothing, remove it. That includes removing shoes and socks. In other words, you want that area to be not, you don't, so take off their shoes and socks and any unnecessary clothing. Then, if you have additional water available, put water on the outside of that person's body, yourself or that other person's body, or on their head and neck, and, you know, face, head, and neck. Now, that might be, depending on what you have available, with your hand putting the water there and repetitively as it dries, put more on, little by little by little by little. Now, if you can moisten a cloth of some sort and use that to wipe down this person. Remember, with heat exhaustion, they might be excessively sweating, so the rest of their body might have a lot of sweat on it. But you still, which is good, but you still need to put this on their head and neck and repetitively water. And on their feet and ankles, repetitively. Keep the water going. You know, here, let's get some more water on you. Let's get some more water on your skin. Let's get some more water on your skin. Then you're not done, because you need to be observed. That person needs to be observed. It ain't over till it's over. In other words, you're not better till you're better. And it could proceed to worsening, which I'll talk about in a minute. But nonetheless, when you or somebody else is experiencing heat exhaustion, that person needs to be observed. You can't just give them water and then walk away. Or you can't just... It's best to have another person available to help that person. If it's yourself, then you need to do all these things to get water inside you, get out of the heat, take off excess clothing, get water on other areas of your body. But you also need to get somewhere where someone can watch you, and that would be generally the emergency room. Now, when I was putting this talk together, I was thinking that. I don't want to mess with putting in details here, but too much. But, you know, heat exhaustion can be in varying degrees of severity. You know, when you're first starting to get heat exhaustion, you're feeling weak and you're excessively thirsty and you're just, something ain't right. Well, you got to drink, and get out of the heat. Get into a cool building. Get water on you, other places of your body. Take off excessive clothing. But if it's early on, maybe a family member or your friend can observe you in the early stages and make sure you're okay. I'm just saying that. It's common sense. But if you're not sure and you're wondering if this person needs medical care, they need medical care. If you're wondering if they need medical care, they need medical care. So call 911. You know, if I happen to be the one watching this person, I might drag my feet a little bit. You out there, if you ain't a doctor or ain't comfortable with that, you need to call 911. You need to get help. All right? That's heat exhaustion. Remember, the symptoms are headache, nausea, lightheadedness, weakness, irritability, excessive thirst, excessive sweating, elevated skin temperature to the touch, decreased urination. What do you need? Water inside you. If you got nausea, you go little by little by little by little by little by little, but persistently. Get out of the heat in somewhere where it's cool. Remove excessive clothing, including shoes and socks. Get extra water on yourself to help, or the person to help clean, help with their cooling. In other words, around their face and neck and feet and ankles. And then it's likely they'll need to be in the emergency room, so call 911. All right, that's heat exhaustion. Now a worsening case is called, and this is a major emergency thing called heat stroke. Now the term stroke, as you know, stroke often means the brain thing. You know, when we're not talking about heat stroke, we're talking about other stroke. What we call it in the business is cerebral vascular accident, or where the arteries or artery to one area of the brain is screwed up and that part of the brain ain't working good, right? Well, that's a regular stroke. Well, a heat stroke, when you know it, is the brain ain't working right. We're back to the brain. So a heat stroke means the brain is not functioning adequately in this time of excessive heat exposure and decreased fluids in the body. And the consequences of the brain dysfunction are symptoms of confusion, altered mental status. They ain't thinking like they're supposed to. They might even slur their speech. Their brain is not, they're not acting right. Their brain is not working right. And as it proceeds, they can lose consciousness. In other words, be out and unarousable. And therefore, on to possibly seizure. Now, seizures are these contracting activities, non-conscious contract. Yeah, I mean, they're not. This is without the conscious area of your brain, where your brain cells are just firing off in a way that it makes your body just contract up. And you're out. You're not conscious at that time, generally. And so that is a seizure. Now, if that happens in somebody with a heat stroke, then I'm gonna talk about how to deal with somebody with a seizure in a minute. I'm gonna come back to that. But because there's other causes of seizure too, and it's important to know how to handle somebody who has a seizure. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. So anyway, the skin in this person with heat stroke feels hot to touch. Now here's a interesting point though. In heat exhaustion, the severe case of heat stress, the skin, remember in heat stroke is severe. Heat exhaustion is less severe. In the person with heat exhaustion, remember I said they're usually excessively sweating. Well, in heat stroke, the worser case, their skin might be dry, oddly enough. Now, it could be excessive sweating happening, but it could be dry skin, dry, hot skin. So if you touch their skin, they're hot. That's a major emergency. If their brain isn't working right, they're confused, altered, they're slurred, something ain't right. Or, of course, if they're out, in other words, they're unconscious, or if they've had a seizure, then you absolutely need to be in the emergency room. You need to call 911. I'm going to come back to seizure in a minute, but someone needs to also, besides calling 911, someone needs to stay with that person until the ambulance gets there. If you, the person helping that person, happen to be alone, and what if you don't have cell coverage, or you don't have your cell phone, or there's nobody else around, you're someplace where there aren't people around, then you got a problem. So, So if you don't have the ability to call for help and nobody's around, I guess, you know, you'd need to, as fast as you can, I mean, as efficiently and safely as you can, get to somewhere where you can call for call 911 or ask somebody else or tell somebody else to call 911 and then go back to the person. But generally speaking, you don't want to leave the person, right? Then while you're waiting, you could be doing some of those cooling steps of getting water on their head and neck. Here's what you do not want to do, though, relative to water and that dopey's brain ain't working right or unconscious or seizure happening person. You do not want to give them something inside their mouth, including water. You don't want to give them something inside their mouth. Keep your hands or anything else out of their mouth because they could choke. Their brain is not working right. Don't put anything in their mouth. Don't put your hand in there. Don't put something in there to mess with their tongue. Don't. Now, seizure. What if somebody's having a seizure? Be it somebody with a seizure disorder like epilepsy or somebody who has diabetes and is on insulin and has a low blood sugar reaction and they're having a seizure. What you still do not want to put anything in somebody's mouth when they're having a seizure. And you say, well, what if they're biting their tongue? Well, okay, they're biting their tongue. That can be dealt with later. Don't mess with anything inside their mouth. Now, if they're vomiting or got a lot of mucus, which often occurs, what you can do when somebody's having a seizure, you can gently, with your body, as gently as possible. Now, this person is in contractions of seizure, right? Well, kind of gently, or with your body, get them over on their side. Kind of roll them over on their side. Do not hold their head and neck tightly. Do not hold any area of their body tightly. Do not. Do not hold their head. When somebody's having a seizure, I don't care what the seizure's from, do not hold their head and neck tightly. Do not hold any other part of their body tightly. However, you could gently kind of roll their entire body over on their side a bit. Therefore, when they're vomiting or have this frothy, mucusy stuff, I almost spit on the mic. I guess I did a little bit. Sorry. If you roll them over to their side a little bit, then that vomit and other stuff can roll away from them instead of staying in their mouth. But don't stick anything in their mouth. Don't reach into their mouth. And don't try to restrain them. Don't try to turn their head. Turn their whole body. Don't mess with turning their head itself. Turn their whole body. Because you don't want them to get further hurt. Okay, I think I'll leave it at that. So that's heat stroke. Again, heat stroke, the bad guy, the worst thing. Again, confusion, altered mental status, the brain ain't working right. They might go out. They might lose consciousness. They might have a seizure. That's a major emergency. Call 911. I hope that is helpful. And by the way, of course, the bottom line is prolonged excessive heat exposure sucks. It's a bad thing. Prevent it. Prevent the problem, I mean. So stay in the shade as best you can. If you're at a job where you're in and out of the sun, well, spend some of your time in the shade. You have to. And you have to stay well hydrated with water or other body fluid. I'm sorry, other fluid into your body. Not alcohol. Alcohol is not a good hydrator. So other fluids, any other fluids is fine as far as I know. So you just need to stay on top. Stay on top of your fluid intake. Stay on top of your fluid intake. Stay on top of your fluid intake. That will hopefully help you stay out of a major body problem from excessive heat. And I think it's 109 out there today. Okay, now I'm going to talk a little bit about the Supreme Court this morning. did a ruling, and I actually don't know the details of the case, but what I do know is that it involved the Affordable Care Act and in effect the constitutionality of that, and in other words the striking down of that or not. And what happened is, fortunately, the Affordable Care Act did not get struck down by the Supreme Court. On a 7-2 vote, they essentially left the Affordable Care Act intact. And again, I don't know about what the little piece of it that was being argued in the Supreme Court today. I just was happy to hear that the Affordable Care Act remains. And it's a 7-2 vote, and you might say, well, who were the two that voted to scrub the Affordable Care Act? Well, I'll tell you who they were. Those were the two justices were Alito and Gorsuch. So my opinion is don't send them Christmas cards this year. Alito and Gorsuch. Okay. Okay, the Affordable Care Act. I want to just say a couple words about it. It's been around since 2010. Some of the intentions of that were to expand health insurance availability for us, the people in this country. It was also to establish elements of disease prevention and wellness into the health insurance policies that would be part of the Affordable Care Act. Keep in mind that the Affordable Care Act, and I said the insurance, health insurance policies, because the Affordable Care Act involves not only it increases the availability of Medi-Cal in our state or Medicaid in other states of the country, that's a good thing, but the bigger thing of the Affordable Care Act was, I'm telling you, was to still continue catering to private for-profit health insurance industry. It just blows my mind when I reviewed today or yesterday the Affordable Care Act. I'm just the Affordable Care Act just blows my mind to review the multitude of little tweaks here and little tweaks there that the Affordable Care Act is supposed to foster and take care of. Having made that statement, let me make clear to you, the listener, my particular stance on the Affordable Care Act. Here it is. Of course, I am in favor of it. I want it to continue and stay. However, here's what I say. Oh, holy cow. How silly we are as a country. It's amazing to me how manipulated we are by the private, for-profit health insurance industry in our country. The money part of our health care, that is the coverage part of our health care system, is so fixated to the incorrect notion that our health care coverage must involve the presence and function of the private, for-profit health insurance industry. That is such a fixated, incorrect notion. It just blows me away. And our legislators, both in the House and the Senate, and our prior presidents, just bend over backwards for this private, for-profit health insurance industry. It's as if they're responsible to them instead of being responsible to us, the people. It's a trip to me. Wow. Anyway, again, currently I favor keeping the Affordable Care Act. However, what makes absolute sense to me for us instead is to revamp our healthcare system in an organized, planned out for the right reasons fashion, where the coverage of our system would be via a system that allowed for equality, and that's equality of availability of healthcare, and common sense in the cost to us all part of the plan of the healthcare system, which would not include us all paying for the ongoing, continuously rising profits of the for-profit health insurance industry. We can do this in an organized, planned-out fashion, again, without the part being present for us all to keep the for-profit health insurance CEOs and others in that system enormously rich. We don't need to do that. We need to take care of ourselves, all of us, equally. I am personally tired of our congressmen and congresswomen and our presidents for acting like they apparently are working for the private for-profit health insurance industry instead of working for us, you and me. I got a quick article about that that just brought this up, and then we're going to have a brief announcement, but let me do this article real quick. And this has to do with cancer death rates and health insurance. It's in a publication called Health Affairs last month. These researchers looked at survival differences in people aged 60 to 64 years of age versus people 65 and older. And the two cancers they looked at were prostate in men and breast in women. These happen to be the two most common cancers, prostate in men, breast in women, and the most common cancer killers of people, men, prostate, women, breast. Other differences looked at were the health insurance presence or not. With the majority of those at age 65 and older, they had Medicare, of course. For those 60 to 64, it was a combination of some that had health insurance, some who did not. The people in the 65 or older group, the Medicare group, had a better survival over the 5 years after the diagnosis of those cancers compared to the people in the 60 to 64-year-old group who didn't have health insurance, even though those were younger people. So the people in the 60 to 64-year-old age group who did have health insurance, however, did better than the 65 and older in the 5-year survival compared to the 65 and older, and that was expected. You know, when you compare a category of people that are 60 to 64 years old compared to 65 and older, you generally feel like the 60 to 64, the younger group, would do better, and they would if they have insurance. The fact is generally expected that the younger persons, of course, would do better. But the takeaway supposition is that all people can do better with health insurance, can do better with health outcomes if they have health insurance, including Medicare. Therefore, the most solid healthcare benefit step to proceed in our company would be expanding Medicare to cover all of us. Our healthcare outcomes most assuredly would improve. I've worked in the health industry for the last 40 years or more, actually, because I was a nurse for a while. It is absolutely complicated and frustrating. We spend so much time and frustration dealing with private for-profit health insurance companies. Doesn't need to exist. We need Medicare for all. Okay, we got a little announcement here at mid-show.
And salutations. I'm Gail Kimball, host of Ask Dr. Gail, which is on the second Thursday of the month. And I'd like to hear your suggestions for topics for my show. But right now, I'd like you to go to kcfr.org to donate to the summer fundraiser. And while you're there, check out the new gifts. Please donate. Go to kcfr.org, People Powered Radio. Thanks, and stay tuned to Community Radio.
Right, hi, this is Ken Logan, and you're listening to The Doctor's Inn on KZFR 90.1 FM. Now what I'm going to talk about is something that's come up because of an article I read and then just made me morph into talking more about this subject, and that is having to do with over the last year and a half with COVID pandemic, the issue of taking care of ourselves has been, in some cases of people, been kind of on hold. And I'm going to refer to an article about that very thing here in a minute. But first of all, let me say that taking care of yourself is something that's important. I, as a family physician, and that's what we do in the medical world, is try to empower people to help to take care of themselves. Again, the reason I'm bringing it up is because of the outcome relative to heart disease and diabetes deaths increasing over the last year and a half, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. So taking care of yourself, to me, means everything from what you're eating to what your activity levels regularly are, and to the situation of your emotional self and your health, emotional health is. Also, there's other medical specifics, such as ranging from care of your chronic medical conditions that you have or might have and don't realize it yet if you haven't been active with medical care with your provider, to taking care of obtaining regular visits, even if by phone, with your healthcare provider, or even obtaining a healthcare provider. I'll tell you, you know, we do the Shalom Free Clinic every Sunday afternoon. I'll tell you, some of the people we see might even have, such as Medi-Cal or some other insurance maybe, but they have trouble finding a healthcare provider. That's a problem. I understand that. So I think it's important for all of us to have availability of a healthcare provider as our ongoing, as our primary care. Well, anyway, and then the other thing that for taking care of yourself and paying attention to, depending on your age and your gender, has to do with cancer screening advice. And depending on your family history, et cetera. So that's another area of concern that I have concern about, is people ignoring or not taking care of their cancer screening advice from the healthcare world. All right, so I'm going to get into specifics from my perspective in a minute, but first let me talk about that article. The Associated Press News on June 9th last week, the title of the article is United States Deaths from Heart Disease and Diabetes Climbed Amid COVID. Now, I don't need to go into the details of that article, numbers and all that kind of thing. But I will tell you that as a healthcare provider, it's not a surprise to me that that's the case. I mean, it's something that I think we all kind of thought was likely to happen with a decrease in medical care availability for one reason or another relative to the pandemic. Just makes sense, doesn't it, that things would pop up. Things would be less well taken care of. You know what I'm saying? And in this case, it was heart disease and diabetes, an increase in the deaths over the last year and a half. So what do we do about that? Well, I'm not happy about it, but now let's do something about it, by golly. And what's that mean? What do we do about it? Well, we start taking care of ourselves, and we help empower other people to take care of themselves, including your loved ones. In other words, some of the taking care of yourself stuff I'm going to talk about doesn't involve the going to a doctor or other healthcare provider. It's things you do for yourself. So first of all, I want to just make sure we all realize that it's normal to be stressed during this last year and a half of this virus thing. It's a normal consequence of being in a situation like this. However, now responding to that stress is back to, let's do things to help take care of ourselves, so that we can do our best, be our best. And some of those basics that I'm going to talk about are taking care of ourselves, doing our best to be our best. I'm going to list them, and then I'm going to go back to them and talk in detail on them more. The first one is body activity, having regular body activity. The next one is appropriate rest, appropriate sleep. The next one and final one is appropriate food intake. And so now I'm going to talk about those in more detail from my perspective as a family practice doctor. Body activity. We human beings, being the animal that we are, needs to keep body activity going on a regular basis, right? The ability to do certain body activities can vary from person to person, of course, but we need to make sure that we're doing what we're able to do and what's right for us as individuals. But we need to not forget that regular body activity. Constant sitting without significant movement is a bad thing. Of course, you know, we will and will need to be sitting for parts of the day, of course, at different times of the day, for instance, but not constantly. You need to be up and about off and on throughout the day, even in a sitting job. You have to be. Then it's best, if able, to do elements of additional body activity, such as regularly done additional activity, such as going for a walk, going for a bicycle ride, if you're able, doing some swimming, if able, or doing some sports activity, if able, additionally. And then you would ask, well, how often? How many times a day? Or, I'm sorry, how many days a week of this additional body activity? And I say it this way, yes. That's my answer, yes. In other words, it needs to fit your life as an individual and your abilities as an individual. So it's a really individualized thing, that is, the walking, bicycling, swimming, or other body activity. But here's what I say as a kind of a place to start relative to how often. And again, this isn't written in stone, but it's the in my mind, 5 days per week, 15 to 20 minutes of time set aside for your body activity. That's a minimal kind of thing. 5 days a week, 15 to 20 minutes at a time. Now, as time goes on, you may expand that. Expand the number of hours, expand the number of days. Individualize it. It sounds rather simple, doesn't it? But I think we all get into other things in our life, and let this kind of thing slip by the wayside, don't we? But I want us to all be vigilant about our activity, doing regular body activity, and schedule it in. If you have a health condition that prevents you from doing stuff like walking and bike riding and swimming, then there are other activities you can do, such as if you're wheelchair or chair bound. In other words, you can't get up and about regularly. But you can, and, you know, I know physical therapists, occupational therapists do this with people in care homes, for instance. You can sit in your chair on a regular, you know, like say, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes, 5 days a week, or maybe more. Sit in your chair and do different body activities with your arms, your legs. Getting help from an occupational therapist or physical therapist would be cool, or getting advice from your healthcare provider would be cool. But family members and you people in that setting know that that's important. Our bodies and our minds do better with regular body activity, done regularly, of course. Okay. That was body activity, regularly done. The next one for taking care of yourself, appropriate rest. And appropriate rest is sometimes another thing that some of us screw up on, you know, right? Mainly, I mean, be sure you take enough time to schedule in enough sleep time in your life. Our lives are busy, and so adequate sleep can sometimes be neglected. That ain't good. That's bad. We all need appropriate regular sleep. How many hours, you're asking? And I'm going to say, I don't know. You're an individual. You got to figure it out for yourself. But generally speaking, I think most of us think around 8 hours per night. But you as an individual may only need 6 or 7 hours regularly done. Or you as an individual may need more than 8 hours. You got to figure it out for yourself. As far as helping yourself and the quality of sleep, that's a tough issue, and it's not something I can deal with on the radio show like this today anyway, and partly because that's an individualistic thing. You really need to talk with your healthcare provider or whoever is your healthcare guru. I think if you have questions about that, I think you need to talk to somebody about you as an individual, what you could take to supplement a supplement or maybe a prescribed medicine, I don't know, with your healthcare provider. But you got to deal with your healthcare provider on that. But regular appropriate sleep is a foundation of our well-being. It needs to happen. So I talked about body activity. I talked about appropriate sleep. Now I'm going into food. Wiseness of eating. And that's how I say it, the wiseness of your eating. And the word wiseness is an important part of the food subject, in my opinion. When we look at eating of the food issue, I see a couple important things about this, and those three things I'm going to talk about. How often to eat, what to eat, and how much to eat. Pretty simple questions, right? How often to eat? Well, that's another question where I'm going to say, I don't know, but I work on the premise of 3 meals per day, spread out across the day, 3 meals per day. I generally think it's important for our body's fuel, that is food, to be coming into us, inside us, on a regular spread out fashion every day. However, another approach could be more meals than 3 per day, but small amounts of food. So more frequent, but less quantity foods is another option. Okay, food. Second point, what to eat. Now here, that's a tough one, ain't it? Here's one of the reasons it's a tough one for us in this country, and that's because of the food that's put in front of us or that we're lured into buying. And remember, we're a capitalistic society. Therefore, the companies and individuals supplying food in our lives there's a vast array of food products presented to us in a vast array of ways, with those being two goals by those companies. They want us to buy more food by presenting that food product in an attractive and luring way. The second one is to present the food to us in a luring taste way. What I wish in my world that I wish upon would be for us all to pick our foods from a nutritional standpoint. Wouldn't that be better? Please. So when I say that, then I say, well, you know, I guess we're only human. Well, it's obvious to me that the food industry in our country takes advantage of the fact that we indeed are only human. So remember, as part of being that human, you have a brain. Oh, I'm so much begging you to use your brain, your own brain, and control your own thinking about when you're choosing your food, and think about it largely, at least, from a nutritional standpoint, as the fuel for your body and the fuel for your brain. Then the second thing about what to eat is the issue of balance. And generally, I think of balance in two areas: the balance of food categories and sources, and the balance of the three calorie sources that are in foods. That is a balance of protein, fat, and carbohydrates. Now, I do, however, have additional advice relative to the issue mainly of carbohydrates, which I'm going to dabble in a little bit in the next few minutes when I proceed with this. But first of all, in the food categories or sources, balance relative to food categories, from my standpoint, starts with the issue that we don't generally eat enough fresh vegetables. So the vegetable category, that's a category that, and as a matter of fact, in my book, it's the only category of food where more is better. That's my opinion. More is better. I can't actually say that about any other category, including fruit. Vegetables, I feel, are important for us for a couple of reasons. First of all, they're high in fiber for our bowel function. They're high in, of course, they have minerals and natural vitamins. Secondly, they're a category of food that's generally less calorie laden, that is, less dense in calories. And this is from a standpoint of helping us avoid excess calories and therefore helping us avoid unwanted weight gain. As far as the makeup, you know, the vegetables themselves, fresh is best. Fresh vegetables are the best. Frozen comes in a second best only. Canned is a third, and distant third at that. But I know from a monetary standpoint, if you're somebody who ain't got enough money to spend on food like you used to or that you want to, and you got to do canned vegetables, okay, more power to you. Go with it. Go for it. If you can raise a little more money and work your way to frozen, that'd be cool. assuming you got a fridge with a freezer. And then fresh would be the best. My personal opinion is organic is best. Organic, in my doctor opinion, organic is best. Fruit. Fruit as a category. Well, here's the problem with fruit. First of all, it can certainly be part of a balanced diet, and I agree with that. Fresh fruit being best. Fresh fruit being best. Maybe one to two of them a day. But here's the problem with fruit, of course. There's pros and cons. Here's my problem with fruit in general in some people, and that's that it's sugar. And sugar can lure you into eating more of it. So it requires some restraint. And again, fresh is better. If you happen to have, I'm just going to say this real quick. I hope I'd say it real quick. If you happen to have type 2 diabetes, oh man, you got to be watchful of fruits. They're sugar. Okay. Then the next category is bean products what's the other name for that? Bean products and so bean and pea products. Soybeans, pinto beans, navy beans, all beans, and peas. They're in a category all their own, I say. And that certainly should be a part of your balanced eating. They contain fiber, protein, minerals, vitamins, and some carbohydrates, although less concentrated carbohydrate than in the fruits and in a couple other categories I'm going to mention in a minute. They generally don't have fat. Okay, now I'm going to morph into grains, and grains are corn, rice, wheat, rye. They can be part of a balanced diet, of course, and are. Here's a problem that I got with them, however. They're carbohydrates. Grains are carbohydrates. They're sweet tasting. Therefore, they lure you in for more. The fiber and minerals in whole grains, the fiber and minerals and vitamins that you might say, oh, I don't want to miss those in my whole grains. Well, those can be obtained by eating balanced eating and other things such as one to two fruits a day and in a vitamin and mineral supplement. I advocate at this point in time in our nation's history, long story short, is that I advise a vitamin and mineral supplement, and I take one myself. Grains don't happen to be a needed food category, just so you'll know. Our body makes carbohydrate or glucose in the liver every day. So grains aren't absolutely necessary. They're not necessary to be part of a balanced diet. They can be, and bless your heart, if they're part of your diet. Okay, but if you have type 2 diabetes or you're overweight, then you better be watchful on them. Potatoes, I put in a category all their own. I know they're a root vegetable, but I put them in all their own, and here's why. Because they're a complex sugar. They're just carbohydrates. They have little in the way of needed nutrition for us. I'm telling you. And I was raised on the farm, my dad, in Tule Lake, near Tule Lake, California, raising potatoes. So I am from a potato-raising heritage. And I'm still telling you right now, they have little in the way of needed nutrition for us. They're out there, so we'll eat them because they're sweet and taste good, and we can... Anyway, I'm not going to get off on any more on that little blurb. Okay, nuts. Nuts, of course, have sugar, that is carbohydrate. They have fat and protein. So they certainly, in a not overly done way, but certainly can be part of a balanced diet. Animal products, that is eggs and muscle tissue, such as red meat, chicken, pork, fish, and shellfish, they have protein and fat, and they certainly should be part of a balanced diet if you're a meat eater. If you're not, you're going to get your protein from the legumes. That's the word I was looking for, legumes like bean products and peas. Milk, that's a tricky subject. I talk about it all by itself because it has... depending on what milk you buy, it has fat. Some of the milk doesn't have fat or has little fat, but it has protein, but it also has sugar, milk sugar. So you got to watch out for that in some people. How much to eat? We eat too much. In this country, we eat too much. Restrain yourself. That's part of the problem in this country. We eat too darn much food. Restrain yourself. How many calories is right? I don't know. I can't even talk about it now because I'm running out of time. I'll talk more about it in the future. Okay. I want you to know this, though, about the Doctor's Inn and underwriters. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by you, the generous contributor, listener to KZFR. And remember, we got a silent fundraiser going on now. And by TLC Affordable Fashion, providing families affordable access to brand care clothing. TLC Affordable Fashion is open 7 days a week in the old Sears building on Forest Avenue at the Chico Mall, and gives a percentage of their sales each month to local nonprofits. How cool is that? This month's group is Youth for Change. Bitchin'. Details on Facebook and at TLC stores. And by Chico Cemetery. Paused by the pandemic, however, the Chico Cemetery is pleased to announce the return of their historical walking tours. The tour is on Saturday. The next tour apparently is on Saturday, June 26th at 10 in the morning. Space is limited and reservations are required. However, there is no charge for this tour. Reservations and information are available to you at 530-345-7243. Remember that the opinions voiced on this here program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. They actually are my opinions. Hey, Megan, what's up next?
We got Planetary Radio.
Planetary Radio. Stay tuned for that. And now, maybe we'll go out. Let's go out. We're going to go out with a song called Dr. Woo by Steely Dan. Hopefully see you in a month. Third Thursday of the month, 6 to 7. Doctor's Inn.
Biscayne Bay, where the Cubans